How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on Rambling About Cars, money, 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 money! Escalade V money. Sells for $500,000. What? Corvette NFT, the green Z06 that was going to come with the NFT, didn't sell at all. If you are just sick and tired of NFTs and green, let's talk about the blackest Porsche 911 ever. It will suck your soul. It is so dark. And it's also kind of weird. And then we're going to talk about some other weird trends, mainly like car stuff that I probably don't understand, but all of you do. Weird trends, weird cars. We're going to show you some weird cars. This is just going to be a weird, fun episode. So without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. And you know who's sitting across the way. Chris Bruce, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, you're playing the hype man. Thank you. Getting me hyped up for this show.
Full disclosure, there's no alcohol in here, but there's like the biggest energy shot I've ever taken with like the little drink enhancer. I've been tired all day.
Isn't it like 4:30 there, man? I
was supposed to have a nap like an hour ago. I mean, the 4th of July, the holiday weekend has completely messed me up. I ended up staying up like pretty much all night, every night. And then I would sleep about 11 or so into the morning. And then be up through the day. And then whenever I try to, you know, actually eat healthy and get a good night's sleep, I feel like crap the next day. So I ate healthy yesterday and I had a really good night's sleep and I feel miserable. So after podcast, I'm going to get a pizza. I'm going to watch the new episode of The Boys because I'm totally addicted to that on Amazon. And I'll probably play some Mass Effect until like 3 a.m. and tomorrow I'll be awesome.
You know, that sounds like a really good night. I've never seen The Boys, I'll admit, but you know.
Oh man, yeah, it's I'll such swap a guilty out pleasure.
Mass Effect for a different game, but other than like your general oeuvre there, I'm on board with. It's just maybe not those specific things.
I mean, if I try to sustain that, I'll be dead in 10 years, but
yeah, you gotta die.
Whatever I try, when I try to do the right thing, I just end up feeling terrible. And yeah, The Boys is that's I feel so bad for enjoying that show as much as I do because anybody that's out there that's seen it, it is a pretty messed up show. It's not really related to cars. I know we're already a little off track, but
yeah, I've got like, we could probably just think, I'll just add, have you seen The Watchmen? Is it like The Watchmen? Is that what it is? Like,
I'm not familiar with The Watchmen. I mean, imagine superheroes.
Yeah.
But they're not like great people. Some of them are really evil. Some of them are just really selfish. One or two of them are pretty good. And then there's the boys that are trying
to take down. That sounds Watchmen-y then. Okay. Maybe I'll have to give that a shot at some point.
So. It's okay. Really good. It's really, really rated R. So we'll just leave it at that. But let's talk cars.
Yep. Let's talk about an expensive car, a car that recently sold. And this is a charity auction, we should point out. So yes, it sold for a ludicrous amount of money, but at least it's going to a good cause. The very, 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 very first Cadillac Escalade
production.
V.
Yes. VIN 001. Yes.
Yes. Sold for $500,000, $500,000. And all of those proceeds go to the Pencil Lewis College of Business and Design in Detroit. So going to a good cause, but still.
It's a lot of coin for an Escalade.
Of course,
the MSRP on this is already $150,000. Mm-hmm. And it's also worth noting here as well. $500,000. There was an extra $25,000 donation. It wasn't clear if that was from the person that bought this Escalade or from another party that just added. So the grand total was $525,000. The full amount goes to the college. Bear Jackson, the auction company, waived all the fees, all of that stuff that they usually do with charity. So, I mean, half a mil for an Escalade, for the first production Escalade, but it's going to a good cost. But I wanted to bring it up just because $500,000 Escalade. And, you know, our MotorOne.com readers, of course, you want to go to MotorOne.com to read this article and all the other articles that we're putting up daily. This has been a big hit with readers. I mean, a lot of people just kind of questioning, you know, $500,000 really. But again, folks,
it's for charity.
Yeah, this went up for charity. And we see this all the time at Bear Jackson when automakers are coming out, especially we see it a lot with General Motors, especially when they're coming out with special vehicles like this. Escalade V, I mean, it's an Escalade, but I mean, it is pretty darn special. I mean, it's got the supercharged 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful Escalade they've ever done. You know, something I don't think that we had actually addressed that I'll bring up here when this debuted, it's the Escalade V, but I've seen more than a few people actually ask, not just at Motor One, but other places, why isn't it Blackwing? Because that's, I mean, the V series Blackwing cars are the ones with the big power, the big modifications, you know, like the CT4V Blackwing, CT5V Blackwing. This is what 680 and change horsepower. I can't remember the exact figure. It certainly has the big horsepower, but as Cadillac explained to me specifically, it's not a Blackwing because Blackwings are more track focused. Yeah, they're street vehicles, but they're also designed to be driven on the street. You take it to the track, you get max performance. So that means, okay, suspension upgrades. That means other brake upgrades. It upgrades more than just power. Escalade is pretty much just the big honking engine under the hood. You're not really going to take it to the track. I'd be honest, I'd kind of like to see somebody do it. I want to see that going around Laguna Seca, just trying to get through the corkscrew. That would be a lot of fun. Hey, for $500,000, maybe we'll see Vin 001 there. No, Vin 001 is probably going to go into a collection to be seen
probably
maybe 10 or 15 years down the road. But yeah, that's a lot of money for an Escalade V, but going to charity. We wanted to mention it here because,
well, I wanted to add one thing, and we haven't discussed this. This is a few week old story, 2 weeks, I think. But it turns out that the folks at Muscle Cars and Trucks, I believe it was Muscle Cars and Trucks. Let me double check that before I misappropriate the source on that. Mm-hmm. Was it Muscle Cars? Oh, I'm sorry. It was GM Authority. GM Authority. They talked to some Cadillac folks, and apparently this was not the first consideration to do a performance Escalade. That apparently back in the day, and we don't know when, that there was a thought to do a V16 powered Escalade. And I wrote the story up, and the kind of the thought that I put out, the speculation, it must have been sometime around the Cadillac 16 concept came out, and that was in 2003. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, when else would Cadillac have a V16 even in, you know, under consideration to put in this thing? But yeah, that's just interesting to think about. 2003. So that's before, you know, the economic issues. It probably just barely could have happened if, you know, the cards had lined up right, but never happened.
Retro was really coming on strong at that point. And
yeah,
when you talk retro Cadillacs going back to the 30s to the V16 era, I mean, that was, that's arguably Cadillac's golden high age point. Right there.
Yeah, that's kind of the world era.
Yep, they were a world standard with their luxury vehicles, with their performance. The big Cadillac V16 was right there at the top. I know Cadillac had talked V16 before. I had heard them talk V16 through the 2000s about possibly trying to come up with a use for it. I hadn't heard about it though for Escalade though. That's interesting. I'm glad they, I'll just say I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It would have been,
that's it, that's a level of excessiveness even beyond what an Escalade should be, I think. But if you're watching on YouTube right now, you're seeing, so this is the Cadillac 16 concept from 2003. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to have a 13, well, it had a 13.6 liter V16 engine, a few of like the magazines and stuff like that from that period. That's way before Motor One and whatnot. They actually got to drive it. Claimed output was 1,000 horsepower, which, yeah, that makes sense from nearly 14 liters of displacement. And yeah, they thought this was going to be their halo vehicle. It was a concept. It was a drivable concept, but it never really got beyond that point. But an interesting, you know, alternate universe of history where there are 16 cylinder Cadillacs driving around in the early 2000s
with like hoods that are 25 feet long. I mean, it's V16 sounds glamorous, and I know you have Bugatti with the W16, which is it's a very compact 16 cylinder engine, but right. I mean, when you're thinking back into the 1930s, I mean, they were going with 16 cylinders, not because it's more than eight, right? I mean, it's how they were making power. Mm-hmm. The technology hadn't progressed to the point where they could really get a lot of power from a smaller engine. So, hey, just make it bigger, right?
Exactly.
So that philosophy doesn't really apply right now, but
we have turbochargers and we have hybridization and we have electricity and we have all
and sorts a little of stuff that motors the size of my fist that'll make like 300 horsepower. It just, yeah,
exactly.
What a time to be into cars. Well, let's since we're talking about modern stuff, how about that Corvette NFT, Bruce?
Well, we should specify.
You heard about that, right? You read our story. Yeah,
I did, of course. It was a Corvette that came with an NFT. We should specify that if someone had bought this, I believe it was the equivalent. So it was sold in the, what do they call it? The digital cryptocurrency, Ethereum.
And yeah, one of the currencies. Again, some of the trends that I don't necessarily understand. I mean, this was Chevrolet kind of taking a step into the world of NFTs. And for those that are like, what? Or for those that might be a little confused, NFT, non-fungible token. As I break it down into my head, it's basically just digital art. It's just it's like a piece of art, but it's digital and it has a special code in it that makes it unique. So if somebody were to try and copy it, I don't know exactly how the copy would work, but it all comes down to, okay, it's just this unique piece of digital art.
So I've got two things for you.
Yep.
So first off, going to this Corvette, the minimum bid was 206 Ethereum, which at that time, the conversion rate of that starting bid was $230,000. You got the actual car, you got the special green Z06.
Right. An actual new Corvette Z06 in a one of one green color.
Correct. And you got the NFT to go with it. And you're right. NFT stands for non-fungible token. And the best way that I have seen it explained is that think of a baseball card, or if you're like a child of the 90s like me, if you remember like the X-Men or Spider-Man cards that came out, that's actually kind of an even better idea. So you buy a pack of cards, let's say. And you buy a pack of cards and you get, you know, there are rarities associated with each card. Maybe it's one of one that, you know, that's super special. It's unique. One of 1,000, one of whatever. And that is set by the person that is making it. You have that card. You have that very special card. You do not own the trademark on that card necessarily. It's not like you can take that image and license it out and make money from it. You don't own that. You just own that specific card. And that is kind of what the NFT is doing, that anyone can right click on an image, right click, save as, and have the JPEG. And literally anyone can do that in the entire world. But you have one with a very special serial number that says this belongs to you. Mm-hmm. And you own that specific image in the digital world. And that to me, that explains NFTs the best. That it's not, you own an image that could be copied. You could take your, 1989 Upper Deck Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card to a printer and put it down on the printer and make 1,000 copies. But those aren't going to be worth anything. That right. one it's, original
it's
card.
It's not the one original. And right. and also, it's not. But it's not just images, because it's digital right. medium. It can be an image. It can, I mean, we've seen things from automakers, not the full NFT, but teasers that we've seen, little short videos. Yes. I'm trying to remember the one specifically. I think it was Lamborghini that did one where the NFT would depict the customer's car, basically, because I think it came with a car. The mm-hmm. NFT depicted the customer's car, like driving through like Mars landscape. I mean, just weird places. And of course, you have artists involved that are creating these things. Now, I'm jumping a little ahead in the discussion here, but I'll just say this: I was really skeptical when the whole NFT thing first started. It was like, well, it's the exact same as if I just, you know, right click and download, like as you were saying, Bruce. But as I've come to understand it a little bit better over time, it's literally just like the digital version of me collecting Transformers behind me, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
In some manner, it's like, yeah, I can go out and I can buy a brand new one that's been reproduced, that was just reproduced last year, or I can buy one from 1984 that's the original, that's going to mm-hmm. cost me a lot more. Why am I getting that? Well, because that's the original. It matters to me. And the NFT world, I think, is much the same. Chevrolet, to get back onto our original topic here, Chevrolet was dipping a toe into the NFT world. And they were going to offer this special one-of-one actual Corvette, but there were zero bids.
Yeah.
And you know, starting at $230,000, I've seen some people talking, okay, well, it was a high starting price, or they were accepting the bids in the digital currency, which might have made it a little odd. For whatever reason, didn't receive any traction, but it sounds like Chevrolet, they were good sports about it, saying, hey, it's been a learning experience for us. We're looking forward to the future. I can say that if you follow some of the links that are in the story at MotorOne.com, I think there are still some auction links that might be in there, or links that'll take you to the auction links or the special pages at Corvette. Those are gone now. So as far as we know, this car isn't coming back, and the car itself hadn't been built yet anyways. Right. It's unclear if it will be built at all now. It was going to be a special one-of-one green. Whether that shade of green would have shown up a year or a couple years down the road for a special model, have no idea. But yeah, this is an example of an NFT step that didn't go quite as planned, Bruce.
Yeah.
And hearing you talk, it sounds like maybe, because we've had these discussions with all of the Motor One people in our team's mm-hmm. chat, with the NFT phenomena. Have you softened a little bit on it?
Because I
certainly have.
I have softened on it. I started out like, this is the dumbest thing in the world.
I think so. Who, dude, so many people I have.
Why would I want to pay money for something that's digital? Like, literally, like, it's an image or a video or something like that. Like, one of the kind of the major NFTs out there are these NBA videos that people can buy and trade and stuff like that. And I'm like, why would I pay money for a video that I can just watch on YouTube, or, you know, like a clip of a video? And then I started. And I'll give credit where credit's due. Seth kind of softened me on this, and it's just baseball cards for the modern age. That,
yeah,
you know, you pay, you buy a pack, you get this digital thing, whether it's an image or a video or something like that, and you own it, and you can trade it if you want, you can sell it if you want, you can do whatever. And I'll admit, it's not for me. I don't own any NFTs, and I don't intend to own any NFTs anytime in the future. But I don't think the people that buy them are just idiots anymore. I see the appeal. I just understand that the appeal is not for me. I do want to share one interesting. Sure. And we don't know where this is going to go yet. So, you know, caveat emptor. But Alfa Romeo might have an interesting idea with this. And that is that for each Tonale being sold, thank you, it is going to come with an NFT, and a person can opt into that. If you don't want it, you don't have to do it. I asked them about it when that came up. You don't have to, but it will come with an NFT, and that will monitor the vehicle's the mileage, the service that's done through the dealer specifically, since they're the only ones that are going to be able to update that. But theoretically, it lets the second buyer, the third buyer, maybe know, you know, what is being done. Like, say you lose the receipt to the service that's been done. Say, you know, you take it to a different dealer and there's not a centralized thing, that potentially the NFT could let you do that. And that's something different than an image or a video. That's a piece of data that kind of evolves over time. So we don't know how this is going to work yet. You know, the Tonale is not available yet. We don't know how many people are going to opt in. But at least to me, it's an inkling that there's a useful function of this. I don't know, but I at least, it makes me think maybe this could work.
Well, what I think of right off the bat, okay, it's basically almost like if you want to take it from a fonder collector standpoint, it's almost like a running digital diary of your ownership with the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Now, I will assume that it doesn't transfer if you were to sell the vehicle. I don't know the specifics on that.
With the Alphas, they said it would. A person could choose to. Not that it necessarily immediately would, okay, but say if you are selling it, you and the second owner could somehow agree to transfer it.
Because I see that in much the same way as, you know, maybe some of the older generation would take pictures of their car, or they would write down their service. You know, they had this little record,
have, you know, a stack of folders with like, yeah, here's every service I did.
And I got to be honest, I still have some records from cars that I haven't owned for years, just because, you know, I had fond memories of the car, so I'm not necessarily attached to them, but mm-hmm, I'm not rifling through these old files to get rid of them, because it's like, oh gosh, yeah, I pull up this receipt. Yeah, I remember taking the Cobra in to have this done, and mm-hmm, and the mechanic, you know, it's a part of the collector process. The difference here is we're talking tangible things that you can touch, like mm-hmm, photos, or gosh, even, I mean, how many digital photos do you have on your PC of cars? How many digital photos do I have literally on my PC? I mean, technically, those could be NFTs if you could get the digital identifier into them. You'd have to put them on the blockchain.
Correct.
But I mean, in that respect, we sort of already have NFTs. We just need to put the digital stuff in. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's digital intangible versus tangible, but it all comes back to something that you want. I think the big shock when this all first started, and maybe it's similar, I don't know, Bruce, I know I'm a little bit older than you. I don't know if you remember the dot-com craze like in the late 90s too well.
I read Wired magazine in 1999. I was there.
I mean, it's like, oh, you build a website? Oh, I'll pay you like $1.5 million to build my website.
That kid sold pixels for $1,000 each. Do you remember that? That just started a website, and like, I think it was $1,000, maybe it was $100 each, but regardless, just like sold pixels, like so companies could make their things. Yeah. And made just a boatload of money off of that.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, it was just kind of that initial, you know, holy cow, here's something a little different. The financial aspect was just kind of crazy and off the hook. And I see that going the same direction with NFTs. When it first came out, it's like, okay, here are these special digital pieces of art that are unique. People were kind of jumping on the bandwagon. Maybe they were taking some pretty big leaps before they were looking, if you will. But I mean, we know the dot-com craze settled back down. And I think especially with the recent thing here with Corvette, the Pininfarina NFT that they were trying earlier, that we know didn't sell during their window. They were doing five NFTs. We know they didn't, none of them sold through their window. that auction
reserve, right?
Right.
And then, so I will pop. They are all now still currently available as price upon request. So,
presumably that means they're still available, but I mean, we're just going by what we see there. I think maybe we're starting to see this settle a little bit, and we've seen other companies offer NFTs. I mean, Hot Wheels did an NFT a little while ago.
That is very much the baseball card kind of aesthetic. You buy like packs essentially, and you get them, and then they are registered through they're registered through whatever Hot Wheels is using, mm-hmm. and you can trade them, you can sell them. It's, you know, anything like that.
And they're not crazy expensive. I think that's what shocked everybody.
A pack's like $9, which is...
Yeah, I think that's what shocked everybody, you know, right off the bat was like, you know, this. I'm going to pay $500,000 for this NFT. And it's like, what exactly are you getting? Well, it's the NFT. Sorry. And it's like,
just to clarify, a pack of seven is 25, which that's high-ish, but that's not...
Dude, it's $25. And it's July 2022.
Right.
I mean, everything costs $25 now. So,
right. So no, a pack of seven for $25. Okay.
Not a big deal. But I mean, there's a little bit of NFT talk. And folks, I would love to know how you feel about NFTs. If, like Bruce and I, maybe you started a little skeptical, but as things have progressed, you understand it a little bit better. You kind of softened up. Email us. You know the drill. podcast@motorone.com. Comment on our articles. Comment on our YouTube page. Probably should have said that in the beginning. We need to get better about saying that stuff in the beginning. We need you to go follow, subscribe. All the fun stuff that we know you want to do. So we keep doing the fun stuff that we hope you want to listen to. Bruce, do we have anything more to talk about on NFTs? It sounded like you were about to say something.
I do. I just have one. I still know that it's not for me. I have just softened to the fact that I don't think people that are into them are idiots or morons or things like that.
No.
If it does it for you, like, hell, I have literally boxes of baseball cards in my attic. Like, it's not that different. And that once I realized it's not that different, it kind of clicked in my head and I got it. It's comic books or baseball cards or something like that for another generation. Just like if you buy a comic book, you don't own all of the art in that comic book, but you own that specific one. It's basically the same thing. So yeah, I it's not for me, but also I kind of get it because I understand that collector mentality. I know you understand the collector mentality where there are certain things that have a value that are just in your brain and you want to have them. And it's the same thing, but rather than being able to flip through the pages or flip through the cards, it's you're flipping through your digital wallet and looking at them. So yeah,
Voltron standing over my shoulder agrees with you completely. And I'll be honest, I'm really excited now to see how automakers are going to do more with this in the future, because as we saw with Chevrolet, with the Corvette, a lot of automakers, they're not just offering a NFT by itself.
Right.
It's coming with something else. So you're getting, I guess, a value added segment to your vehicle, to your purchase. I mean, some of them we're seeing, okay, here's your digital NFT, but this is also going to come with other physical real world advantages, such as, you know, special tours, so kind of merging the two worlds together. Mm-hmm. It's an exciting time. I want to see it. I want to see more of it. What do we want to do next? Cause I know we have a few weird things to talk about, but we also have some comments that we need to catch up on. What should we do?
Let's do comments first.
You want to do some comments first?
Okay. Yeah, let's do comments first and then we'll get into weird.
Okay. Well, I mean, last week we had just that one awesome email that we got from Ted that we read, and there were a lot of comments that came back on that from last week's episode. Before getting to that, though, how about we jump backwards a couple weeks back to the June 24th episode, where we were talking about it wasn't the Goodwood wrap up. It was sort of the Goodwood what's happening right now, because we didn't get a chance to read those comments at all. We'll start with Vampire Bear. Thanks for commenting again. Another great episode, guys. I've been watching a lot of Goodwood Festival of Speed. It's been incredible, which I'm sure was their aim after the last 2 years. I didn't get to watch as much of it this year as I wanted. I usually try to have a window on when I'm working, just kind of in the background, especially like on Thursdays and Fridays when you're seeing a lot of the exhibition runs, when they're getting down really serious to the time stuff. I'm not really paying as much attention because it's great.
It's hard to do,
it's great. They're professional. They're getting the job done, but I really enjoy just watching the people out there having a blast and just enjoying the vehicle, enjoying the atmosphere without the pressure of trying to win. And that's when you see the guys, like, I love the old air cool 911 guys that are out there with, like, you know, 60s and 70s era 911s where really? It's opposite lock on every corner. Right. And that's how you have to drive those cars, and they know how to drive them, and they're just hanging it out on every corner. And it's like, you can see them smiling through their full face helmet. I swear to God, you can. So I didn't get to watch of it as much as I wanted to. Hopefully you got to watch some of it. Harf of Jar says Goodwood Festival of Speed is really awesome. Been a few times, a little bit jealous, not going to lie. Mm-hmm. This year seems like everyone is going. I mean, if you caught the episode last week, senior editor Jeff Perez was there, and he pretty much said the same thing. It would just, it felt like a very, very big event this year. Great to hear the show update talking about my Toro Show project car. It is still sitting in Michigan under wraps, and it will be for a few months, but I can't wait to get going on it. I'm already looking at parts, and I'm already deciding what I'm going to try to do first. And it's like, dude, I need to get to Michigan first, which hopefully will happen in a couple months. But when I get there, I've got a project car waiting. And also, Harf of Jar says, also the front wheel drive $5,000 challenge a couple weeks ago, I found a 2005 VW Passat GLS TDI diesel wagon, black on gray leather, 303,000 miles for $4,500. I said this on our YouTube channel, buy it.
Yeah.
Go buy it. But Harf of Jar on the other side of the pond. So Bruce, maybe you should go buy that one.
No, that's not for me.
Gino Nix also commented, said, all in all, that's a sweet looking Mustang. I'm assuming you're talking about the my red 95. I shared a few pictures from the road trip that I did. I appreciate it. It's a 10 footer. If you get close, you're going to see some scratches, some hail dings. I had a lot of the hail dings removed. There's still some in some spots, some trim, but it's a fun driver. And I tell you what, for that 2,531 miles, I think exactly, 27-year-old car, and it didn't hiccup, not once. So I'm pretty happy with that. Ted Adam Green says,
but just, you know, you'll have.
Well, I didn't let it become a heating issue. It was starting. Okay. It was starting to heat soak a little bit. So before it got to where it might be an issue. Yeah,
sure.
But I'm trying to do 80 miles an hour in 100 degree temperatures with 50, 60 mile an hour, just hot as hell crosswinds. It was the hottest drive. I mean, I've never driven like through Death Valley or some of the deserts. I got to imagine it's similar, because I even went through my first dust storm through South Dakota.
Wow.
Coming back. I mean, that's how hot and dry and windy it was. So it was quite a drive. Ted Adam Green, great ramble. I will take your email us challenge and be sending one that has a serious topic for a segment on a future show. Well, you know how that one went, because we talked about it last week. Thanks for that question. Folks, email questions like that at podcast@motor1.com. We want to read more. We want to hear more about those. Vampire Bear had another comment here. Here's an idea. How about interviewing some dealers and car makers? I tell you what, we do have some guests coming up here just in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
I would love to get some, you know, higher level car makers on the podcast. I won't drop any names right now. I'm going to try to get one that would be a pretty high profile guest that I think,
even know who you're talking about.
So that's everybody, cool. Everybody would recognize. I just got to figure out the right way to try to do it. So yeah, it's something I've been mulling in my head. I don't like to bring these ideas to fruition unless I think they might actually be accomplished. So, but yeah, definitely we're working on some more guests. Thanks much for sending in that suggestion. Bruce, do you have any comments pulled up there on your side?
I've got a couple. So, Sorry. Harf of Jar, he's recommended videos on the Ioniq 6 from Top Gear and Late Break Show, where they do walk arounds. Gino Nix, Ted's question was really good. I was going to purchase a new car or truck soon. I'm considering an EV or going one last time with a gas powered vehicle. I guess it depends. If you need a truck, I can understand going gas powered. If you want a car, I could see the argument for going hybrid or plug-in hybrid this time. It just depends on what you want and what kind of your own, you know, needs are, what you're going to do with it. You know,
yeah, I mean,
we're in a big transition phase, so yeah. It's hard to say.
If I wasn't as rural as I am right now, and I say that, I live in a city of 70,000 people, but you go 5 miles outside of the city and there is nothing. And then the next big city is like 6 hours away. So, mm-hmm. if it would make it difficult for me to try to drive anywhere, I would basically just have to stick to Interstate 90 the whole way. So, I mean, location is certainly going to play a role in that. Even when I move back to Michigan, I'm still going to be, pretty rural. I'm going to be in the northern part of the state, not the upper peninsula, but the northern part of the lower peninsula. Where
you don't think you could get away with a plug-in hybrid though?
Oh yeah, a plug-in hybrid. I guess I'm thinking pure EV. It's like okay, if I'm gonna go that route, just go full on EV.
Okay. I think that there's room for the middle ground, me personally. You know, I know it's a compromise that, you know, you're kind of working with two powertrains, but I think for a lot of people, especially if they're like you and in a rural area, I could see the argument for going PHEV. Because you eliminate the range anxiety issue. Like, oh, now, I ran out of charge. I'm going to fill up with gas. Oh,
now see, a plug-in hybrid makes more sense to me in an urban environment.
Really?
Because if you're in an urban environment where maybe you're commuting, but 10 or 15 miles a day. For your
15 miles, then you're just running on EV power,
right?
Like, you just plug in when you get home.
But for every day you are running on pure EV, you have all the benefits of the EV. And then sure. If you want to jump in the car and go visit family, that's maybe 5 or 6 hours away. If you're doing that, maybe once every couple months or so, you can kiss the range anxiety goodbye. You can kiss goodbye the worry of finding an available charger that actually works. There are some maintenance issues with a lot of the chargers. For sure. Me, an urban environment really makes sense for a plug-in hybrid. If you only have room for one vehicle, if you have room for a couple vehicles, then hey, get your full-on EV that you're running locally. And then mm-hmm. for longer trips, if you can make the EV work, great. If you still need something with gasoline, you've got the second vehicle right there.
Yeah, maybe. I think there's a lot of opinions on this. I don't think either one of us are wrong. I think it just kind of depends on your personal situation. I mm-hmm. don't know. I guess it's a matter of what you can afford, and it's a matter of where you live. If you're street parking only, then yeah, I think you're right that, you know, the PHEV is a really good compromise. If you, though, you live in an area where you have covered parking or a garage or you can have two vehicles, then... Yeah, I don't know. Good yeah. points.
No. Very, good very point. Good points. We're in a very interesting time. Right. And it's nice to have these options. I'll be honest. It's nice to have an all EV option. I was talking to my brother-in-law a couple of weeks ago. He's commuting. Oh, I forget exactly what he said. He's commuting a significant difference each day. He has a mm-hmm. Honda Civic right now that gets like 40 some MPG on the highway, but it's like, he's filling it up like every couple days right now. And even at 40 MPG, it's costing quite a bit. It's like, well, if he goes full EV, something that has at least 150 mile range or so, he just comes home, plugs it in. I mean, you know, you're getting rid of the gas station altogether.
Sure. While we're on this topic, my parents, they just bought their first ever EV. They bought a BMW i3, and I was talking to them and they were wondering, you know, if we hardwire a plug-in station to our home, is that going to increase our cost when we go to sell the house at some point. Like, you know, it, as people go further into the future, it's hard not to argue that EVs are the future. Like, you know, gasoline's still going to be there, but I feel like it's going to dwindle to, you know, a smaller and smaller subset of vehicles. So if you are shopping for a house and one has a charger that's already installed and one doesn't, is the one that already has a charger, is that going to be more attractive to a buyer? Like right now, I would say it's too soon to tell, but you wonder in 5 years time or 10 years time, you know?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the buyer, right? Sure. I know
it depends on the area.
It depends on the area. I mean, when I've been house hunting, I've talked to people that have gone to houses that have swimming pools, and it's like, oh, this is cool. It adds value to the house. And then other people, it's like, I don't want to deal with a swimming pool and all the crap that goes along with it. That's taking something away from me. Right. Mm-hmm. An electric charger, I don't necessarily see it ever detracting, you know, taking value away. But if you aren't driving an EV and have no interest, I mean, it's certainly not going to be any sort of value added item. I mean, it all depends on the buyer, but I would think even if you are an EV connoisseur, I'll say, I don't necessarily see it adding a lot, because you can have one installed for what, about $1,000, $1,500?
Yeah, $1,500 to $2,000, I think, is kind of the number.
They're about. So, I mean, it's convenient to already have it there, but I mean, is it going to add a huge value to a home?
It's not going to add $10,000 to your house either. Right. But anyway. Let's talk car colors.
Yeah, no more rambling about houses. Let's talk about some cool cars. This Porsche 911. We just came upon this video. Well, actually, Bruce, you found the video, if I remember
correctly. Well, I'll give full credit where credit's due. Chris Pockert, who formerly from Autoblog and formerly from CNET Roadshow and places like that, he posted it on Twitter. I saw it and I shared it with you guys. But yeah.
Thank you for that, Chris, because our readers are loving it right now.
Yeah.
C3. Yeah, our readers are loving this right now. World's blackest Porsche 911 looks unreal and disorienting. Our colleague Jacob Olivia wrote this one up. If you're familiar with the BMW X6 in Vanta Black, it's very similar to Vanta Black. And if you're like, what the hell is all of this? You have no idea. You can go to Motor One Podcast and see what we're talking about, or you can go to MotorOne.com when you have a chance and look at the article. It's basically a version of a black paint that absorbs nearly all light. And right. That's just like,
so this car is, so we need to specify real quick. There is Vanta Black, there is Vanta Black and Musso Black, which are kind of competing against each other. This Porsche is Musso Black, which reflects 0.6% of the light that hits it.
Yeah.
So 0.6. Or to put it another way, it absorbs 99.4% of the light that hits it.
Right.
So essentially it's hard to get much blacker.
Right. But Vanta Black does get a little bit blacker,
I think, by 0.2%.
Just a little bit. But the takeaway is, and you think, well, yeah, I mean, like a flat black finish. I mean, that absorbs light. It's like, no, this goes way beyond just a flat black finish. When you look at it, it looks two dimensional. It does not look real, because you cannot see any like body lines, creases whatsoever. For those that are watching right now on our Motor One Podcast YouTube channel, you're seeing the thumbnail image of this car. That is not a doctored image. It looks like just a two-dimensional, like brush painted picture. Right. No, that is the actual car. And yeah, it absorbs nearly all light. The Vanta Black, correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, Vanta Black is used in the aerospace industry, so it's not something that you can go and get as an option for your car. Right.
And I also, if I'm not mistaken, it is incredibly heavy, or at least in terms of what paint is, it is incredibly heavy in order to be able to do that. I believe Musso Black is the same way, because in order to absorb that much light, it's just kind of so far beyond. But yeah, aerospace industry, defense industry, space, that type of thing, where you need to you know, not show up where you need to be as black can be.
Could you imagine driving this at night?
No.
I mean, the only reflections would be off the glass and the headlights. And you think, well, yeah, I mean, a black car at night, you're not going to see anything. No, you'll still get a reflection off of a regular black car if a light hits it directly. This, you won't even get a reflection.
Yeah. It's shocking and it's fun and it's incredibly rare because this paint is stupidly expensive. I thought we had done a story on it before and I'm not finding it when I looked it up, but it's so much more expensive than standard paint that, like, to paint a car in this color is, you know, only a handful of people are ever going to do it. As we're showing here, if you're watching on YouTube, BMW did it for an auto show a little bit back, and that was in Vanta Black, which is kind of the competitor to Musso Black. And again, it's a one-off because the paint's so expensive, and also who wants, you know, you're never going to see this car at night other than from the headlights and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of segues into a little bit of what we're going to talk about here, just in terms of kind of weird cars and totally. weird finishes and just kind of colors in general. I mean, we've seen the Porsche, we've seen the BMW in Vanta Black. I mean, Bruce, it's neat, it's shocking. I would never want a car that's painted no. like that. I mean, how do you feel about that?
It's exactly what it's cool and it's shocking and it's not really realistic, and it's so interesting to see videos and pictures of it, but it's not realistic. And I don't think this is ever something an automaker is going to offer from the factory mm-hmm. because it is so expensive. It's adds so much weight. Like, there are so many compromises, but it's also so fascinating to look at, where you look at a color and you're like, to quote Spinal Tap, how much blacker can it be? No more blacker. Like,
I guess I would, before I would finalize my decision, I would need to see one in person. Because yeah. I mean, that's fine.
Like, we've only seen pictures, not in video. I would need to walk up to one and see it.
Because at least there you can perceive it in three dimensions. I mean, as we're looking at a photo or a video, we're still perceiving it on a two-dimensional screen.
Correct.
So it's going to look different in person. But I can't imagine wanting a car in that color. I mean, I like a car that's shiny. I'm not even a really big fan of the various wraps that people do where it's just like a dull or a matte finish.
So as we were talking about this earlier, you kind of prepped me for a little bit of a rant you have about patina, and not authentic patina, not like, oh, this car sat outside for a while and it got some paint fading or whatever, but fake patina. So I'm going to cue you up here and I need you to hit it. Do your patina rant.
I don't know that I have a patina rant, but it's like, it's like, let's preserve how I didn't take care of this car, or let's preserve how you didn't take care of this car.
No, that's different. That's different though. I disagree.
It's not. You leave it outside, you don't wash it, you don't polish it, you don't do anything to take care of the exterior. The paint fades away, it rusts. I mean, I get it. I mean, let me just be clear there. I do understand the appeal. It's like you're getting better with age, you know, you're showing your wisdom, you're showing your character. Hey, this vehicle lived a life. You're looking at the life that this vehicle lived, with how the paint has faded, with how you have some rust forming in certain areas. That's almost like just a visual history of the vehicle that you can almost taste. And I do understand that aspect, and I can appreciate that aspect. But I don't necessarily want to preserve it. I really don't want to promote it, I guess, maybe is the right way. It's
okay.
The car has lived a life. I can see that. I can appreciate that. now let's give it the love and attention it deserves. Let's bring this car back to its former glory, right? Instead of like throwing a coat of clear over the top and leaving all the damage there. I understand the appeal for some people. I just don't understand why you would want to preserve a crappy looking vehicle. Sorry. I also know there's an artistic standpoint where it's like no vehicle will age the same way.
That actually goes back to the NFT thing we were talking about, where the whole thing about comic books or baseball cards or whatever is the fact that they were stored in a certain way. And some of them were stored poorly and we value those at less or whatever, but they still exist. Or some were stored in this like pristine, absolutely perfect condition. And yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you have original versus restored, mm-hmm. which can also be an argument there. But in my mind, when I see that, I just think, why don't you just get the damn thing painted? You know, have it look original and wonderful and celebrate. I mean, celebrate has the vehicle as it was when it was brand new. It can be that way again. You know, I'm just not into the whole preserving the patina thing. Hey, it's earned it. Well, you know what? No. It's earned some respect and it's earned to be treated nicer. It's earned its former glory back. Give it its former glory back instead of celebrating how it was neglected for 30 years. I mean, that's kind of how I see it. And I mean, hey, I was a professional detailer for many years. I don't know if that factors in here, but that's natural patina. The people that are like doing it on purpose is just
that's the point where it bothers me.
I will politely say no. How about no? If you're doing that on purpose, just no. Just step back, surrender your license.
No, now you're being mean. Stop that. Everyone, this is a big tent hobby, and if you no matter what you have, it deserves to be respected. I'm there, man. I'm that guy.
But if you're, I mean, I've seen people that like intentionally, I mean, they're like grinding on their car and then they pour salt water on it to get it to rust. It's like, dude, this is a 2013 Honda Civic.
Right. This
isn't a 66 Mercury that's been sitting in a field.
Yeah. So here's where I go. I understand the people that, especially if it's a one family car or if it's a car that has an interesting history, especially an interesting personal history, I can understand maintaining kind of the aging process that it's gone through. I get that. It's where you add fake patina where you lose me immediately. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the fake patina thing. And like you said, the people that are putting salt water on their car or the people that are, you know, somehow prematurely aging the vehicle, that loses me. It loses me immediately. So
I'll give you that. It loses me. But if that's what you want to do, hey, the car industry, the car hobby is big enough for everybody. But I'm not sold. And, you know, as I say this, it occurs to me that the Mustang sitting in my garage, it has Ford's, I think it's laser red. It was a tri-coat, a special tri-coat color that they did. It has faded unevenly over 27 years. It's still nice and glossy. The clear coat is in great shape, but depending on the side of the car you're on and how the light hits it, one side kind of looks very pale. The other side looks very deep, just I guess from previous owners where maybe it sat outside.
Or oxidation just of that paint naturally. You don't know.
I don't celebrate that in the least. It bugs the hell out of me every time I see it. If I keep it super polished and shiny, it almost looks like it has a color shifting paint, but the color isn't shifting. It's just different, right? So,
dude,
I mean,
you would hate the vintage watch market. Like, I wish Seth were here right now. Cause like there's this idea called like tropicalized, which are especially older watches that
tropicalized
tropical climates, and the faces of them get this like really rich kind of brown gray color that they were never supposed to be from the factory. It's just because they've been hit by the sun for decades and they get this color, and that is valued these days. And so
I'm totally stealing that, by the way. Tropical. My Mustang is tropicalized.
Exactly. And it
depending on how I look at it. Yeah, the right side is like lived in the Keys, I guess.
Yeah,
and the left and side, the left side has been in Minnesota.
Exactly. But yeah, so I don't know. I think it's a to each their own kind of thing. I would never look down on a person who wanted, you know, paint your car, do whatever you want with it. The fake patina thing, it's where you start like adding age to something that didn't actually do that. That's when you start losing me. But if you look at a door ding or a paint issue, or like you were saying, like paint fading, and you see like, yeah, there's some kind of beauty in that. Like you think about like antiques, like my grandmother has this Hoosier cabinet that's from sometime in the 1800s. I don't know when, but it's been around since then. And it's got like little dings and, you know, stuff like that on it. And I find all of that beautiful because that's how it was used. Like it shows that it didn't just sit somewhere. It's not pristine. It made people happy. Like I get that. And I think cars can be the same way. But also, if you don't like that stuff, feel free to paint it. Like this is not a value judgment. It's an entirely an aesthetic thing that maybe I prefer one thing, maybe you prefer the other thing. There's not a right or wrong. It's just a preference. So yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I understand it. I understand why people would appreciate that. And I could even appreciate it on a certain level.
Sure.
But then I want to fix it.
But like you can appreciate the guy that shows up. Let's talk about Mustangs. A guy with a 64 and a half Mustang. He bought it, you know, from a teacher who drove it 10 miles a day, and it's brand new and it's never been touched. Like it's as it was. Like there's something beautiful about that in its own certain way. Even if, you know, oh, someone dinged the door one time or, oh, you know, whatever.
I guess.
No? Okay.
I would have to see it. I mean, we're talking about just an original vehicle versus a restored vehicle, right, versus something in the middle where you preserve the damaged originality. That's where you kind of lose me. If you have an original car and you're just driving around and you're just keeping it original, I see it in a different way. I guess it's preserving that damage instead of fixing it.
So
because I see it as damage.
I am looking at a steamer trunk that I inherited from my great aunt. It has decals on it that have largely worn away. Unfortunately, some of them my dog ripped off currently, but like it has this like age to it. And I would never go and try to find the original decals and try to put them back on and things like that. I respect that, you know, this thing has been around for 80 years probably, and it's sitting there, and now it is a coffee table. Like that's not its original purpose, but that's what it's serving as now. But it's still around and I still appreciate it. And so I kind of think about cars the same way.
Yeah, well, I think about it that way too. It's an original item that's still being used for its original purpose, and you're appreciating it for that original item.
And I understand it's not perfect. It's not pristine, but it's
beautiful. Are you going to go over there and just like spray it with a can of clear top coat to put a nice shine on it?
Right. Exactly.
While keeping the torn stickers and all the stuff in place. Here, that's where I start to
that this thing exists.
Oh my gosh, folks, we're getting a look at Bruce's house. Look at that tablecloth.
There's nothing wrong with it. I inherited that too. It's
all black to me. Sorry, man.
Okay, I apologize. But anyway, like it's right there. It's
point taken.
At some point things become antiques and you don't necessarily want to that their age is what makes them special, that the way that they are makes them special. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It comes down, like you said, it's a matter of, it's just a matter of what you think and what you feel. And like, yeah, you can restore things and make them look better and make them look prettier. But then also, like, things have been around for centuries or mm-hmm. decades or whatever. Like, yeah.
Well,
we're getting into this whole huge, like, aesthetic, because I'm looking around, because weirdly
rambling about room, philosophy. I love it. We should do more of it.
Yeah.
Context matters too, though. If you have something that has been in your family for generations, I mean, that's obviously different than going down to the local used car shop and, oh, look, here's this 1956 Buick that's been sitting outside for years. I'm just gonna leave it exactly the same way. I have no history with a car. It's like, no.
Totally.
So
cool.
That'll be the next episode of Rambling About Philosophy with Bruce and Smith. This has been a good one. Let's stick with the trend here. We've got a few more minutes, and we've been talking about weird car colors. We've been talking about arguably some weird trends, like with NFTs and what we were just talking about with patinas and things like that. Maybe not weird, but it got us thinking, well, you know what? We cover some weird cars every now and again. And it can be everything from just like bizarre custom creations to just more bizarre custom creations, I guess. So we're going to wrap this episode up by sharing some of the weird cars we've seen over the years. And we also are going to take this moment to let you know at MotorOne.com, if you go there to the main website, I mean, you'll see we have various categories that mm-hmm. various articles are listed under. One of those categories, if you jump into the categories, we have a weird category. And probably 99% of the strange cars that we write about will go into that weird category. So if you're ever looking for something a little different, just go to MotorOne.com, pull up the weird category. You're going to see all kinds of stuff. Bruce, you just wrote one today. I don't think this is in the weird category, though. This is going to be in the RV category, is it not?
It is in our motorhome category. And you know what? By the time you read this, I will add the weird category mark to it. I was just sharing our weird category. So, Smith, I am going to interrupt your interruption. And so we have been covering this person who took a Ford Maverick, not the modern pickup, the original Ford Maverick.
Oh, you're going to do the Maverick. Okay.
No, I'm just, this is a quick segue. Yep. Who put a lawnmower carburetor onto its V8.
Yes.
And has been chronicling that process. This person put it on a dyno. This person has done gas mileage tests on it. It's a cool build. Like, it's a weird build.
Well, I mean, it's basically like a test bed. It's a 74 Ford Maverick with a 5-liter 302 V8. Really, engine not much different from what I have in the garage. Mm-hmm. But he decided, somebody told him at some point, you can't get a lawnmower carburetor to work on a regular engine. And he was just, he's kind of a genius when it comes to fuel delivery systems. And just knows engines. So, I mean, somebody tells him, you can't do it. Yeah, okay, I'll do it. And he's stressed over and over, it's not remotely practical. He didn't do it for the practicality. He did it for the absurdity, just to show that it could be done. And he created his own app to monitor air fuel ratios, air fuel ratios. And he has the smallest carburetor that you can get, like a regular style carburetor for a lawnmower. And he 3D printed some parts and he managed to get it onto this 5-liter 302 V8 engine. And he gets 42 miles to the gallon on the highway. He's estimating 42 miles to the gallon on the highway.
And he makes, what, 80 horsepower at the wheels?
He was able to dyno it, and it's making 59.7 horsepower at the wheels.
Sorry, so, I was thinking it was 80.
The irony there is, if you go back to the mid-70s, like a mid-70s Ford Maverick with the entry-level inline 6-cylinder engine made about the same horsepower. So basically, mm-hmm. he's taken a V8 Maverick, and he's turned it into a stock 6-cylinder Maverick, but he still gets 42 miles to the gallon. And he just drove it on the Hot Rod Power Tour for like 1,000 miles. So he's done pretty good. Maybe we'll talk about more in the future. We need to talk about this, though, because
This is a Kenworth custom camper. It's a Kenworth semi-truck with an Airstream trailer mounted on the
back.
It is
so much more than that. So this is a guy named... I wrote up the story. I watched the video, I think, three times now because I also showed it to my wife.
It is amazing. This is a guy named
Charlie Nichols. He was a truck driver by trade. He was getting ready to retire, and he saw this Kenworth in the woods. He drove past it several times, and he finally decided to stop, and it turned out it was for sale. Negotiated a price. He said apparently it had not run for 12 years. As you're going to realize as I tell this story, Charlie could have been a mechanical engineer, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, in a different life. He got it running within an hour, he said. Now, he said it was very tired, and he's done a lot of work to it since then. But still, he got this non-running Kenworth running within an hour. And then a few weeks later, he found an estate sale, and there was an Airstream available there. And he's like, well, let's just put those two things together. And he did. So he took this Kenworth. He used a Volvo donor vehicle. So the front axle is now from a Volvo, and a good portion of the rear is now from a Volvo. Volvo semi-truck. For anyone who doesn't know, Volvo makes semi-trucks. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And he created this super impressive rig out of it. Ton of work to it. So from the outside, to me is most impressive is that, so you can see what looks like these massive fuel tanks. They're not actually fuel tanks. Only this one in the front is a fuel tank. He has a toolbox. He has other storage. On the other side, he actually has an inflatable pontoon boat rolled up in one of these. He took just like scrap fuel tanks, sliced them up, turned them into storage areas, and that's what he's using for storage around the vehicle other than the one fuel tank. And it looks like you can't tell by looking at it. Yeah. You would have to know. So inside, he said he has 110 square feet of living space. Sadly, the person that made this video, they didn't do a full tour inside. They focused on the outside. Mm-hmm. The outside's really cool. I would have loved to have seen the inside. But just from what we can see of the inside, he's got a nice sitting area. He's got a kitchenette. He's got a sleeping area in the back. He mentions waste tanks in the video, so I'm guessing he's also got a bathroom. He's got a ton of propane. He says he has enough to go a whole winter camping just on propane. Like, I want to say it's over 100 gallons of propane. It's amongst the various tanks. He goes through like, I got 25 here, I got 25 here, I got a 50 here. Like, he's got a ton of propane tanks for heating. And then, you know, the other amazing thing is that you can kind of see it here. He's got a Cummins, and I apologize. My semi-truck knowledge is not the tippity top of the world. He's got a Cummins KTTA engine. That is a twin turbocharged inline six turbo diesel. He figures he's making about 1,000 horsepower from that. And according to the video, granted, the turbos are like literally like the size of pumpkins.
Yeah,
and he says in the video, so he usually hauls this rig and then he tows his Ford F-150 behind it. He says that in 10 seconds on the highway, he can go from 80 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour, which is more than anyone needs.
I've got to do the obligatory Smokey and the Bandit reference. You was doing 96 miles an hour? I didn't know my truck could do 96 miles an hour.
He said this most latest trip, though. So back in the day, he said several years ago, this was their camping rig. These days, it's his commuter rig. He lives in Texas, and he commutes up to the Northeast. I don't know where he lives in the Northeast. He hasn't mentioned it in the video, but the rig, the Kenworth for it, came from New Hampshire. So I'm guessing somewhere Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Connecticut, somewhere around up there. And this is kind of how he goes back and forth between his home in Texas and wherever he is in the Northeast. And it's just a damn cool rig, man. Like,
I love that he preserved the pass through from the cab right to the trailer.
Well, there was no pass. He made the pass through. He created his own boot for it.
Oh, I thought the pass through was there in the rig, but not in the trailer.
That's not the, maybe I misunderstood the video.
No, you wrote it. You saw it. I trust whatever you say. I'm pretty sure he made the pass through. I dig that you can sit in the cab of this truck and just walk right back into the camper.
Totally.
It's like the biggest sleeper in the world because of that. Right.
Yeah.
No, that thing's just cool all around. Yeah.
Was crazy is the fact that he has enough storage. He has a pontoon boat, an inflatable pontoon boat that he stores in all of that storage area. That it's just like, yeah, like, you know, you could take this thing, you take it to the lake. I'm going to go fishing for the day and then I can go chill. Like
he's got a very unique rig there.
Weird. Just the fact that it's like this Frankenstein of, you know, it's a Kenworth cab, it's a bunch of Volvo pieces, it's an Airstream in the back, it's a Cummins engine. Like, he just kind of made it all work. And I really recommend people to go watch this video because it's a really cool build. And check it out. I would love to track him down and have him on the show because he seems like a cool guy.
Has this podcast airs on Friday? We're obviously recording on Wednesday. This article just went up a few hours ago, and it's currently the number one article on MotorOne.com right now as we're recording by a very, very, very wide margin. So everybody's checking this thing out. You'll probably still be able to see it in the slider right on the top of MotorOne.com on Friday. If not, just search up Kenworth, man. It's going to be right there. Bruce, do we have time for me to share just another quick little weird car, something that I wrote a while ago?
Yeah, we're at an hour and 11 minutes right now. So yeah, you do one and then we'll call it a night.
Well, let me see if I can bring this up here, because is that the right screen?
Yep, it's there.
There we go. You're talking about campers and I'm talking about roller skates. What? Yeah, wait a minute. That is a roller skate. It's legit roller skate, but it's not. It's actually a vehicle. We don't have any other pictures to share other than what you see right here, which, looking on YouTube, that's a roller skate. But if you look at the very, very top of, well, the tongue, right? There's a steering wheel up there. This actually has a custom-built frame, and it has a V8 engine, and it is a running, driving roller skate. And I don't know if this is still at the Volo Museum in Illinois. This is an article that I wrote back in February. It was just a video that kind of chronicled the uniqueness of a roller skate. And, I mean, obviously it's fiberglass. They're using dragster wheels front and rear to get like the proper, just hard plastic roller skate wheel look. And I mean, it is probably the weirdest vehicle I have ever written about in my life. And as we were talking about weird stuff, this immediately popped to mind. But then, Bruce, as you were talking about that Kenworth, there's also like a DC-3 or some aircraft that was converted into like a running driving camper that we should probably talk about on a future episode. But yeah, Volo Museum. I'm trying to remember where the museum is at in Illinois.
I don't know where in Illinois, but it's in Illinois.
But yeah, I mean, it's on display at that museum. The V8, it's not a super powerful V8. As you can imagine, it's a little sketchy to drive. It has a very short wheelbase and you do sit up very tall in it. That steering wheel is right at the top. There's an access port underneath and a ladder that you get into and you climb up to the top. And yeah, I mean, you have all the controls up there. You run around, run it, drive it. It's just a Chevrolet V8 engine. It's 14 feet. It reaches 14 feet up into the air. Oh, that's right. It's a regular 5.7 liter Chevy V8. So, I mean, it's not super fast, but it's 14 feet tall, 13 feet long. So it's not necessarily something that you want to go corner carving. You wouldn't carve corners. The corners would carve you. top speed is 20 miles per hour. Obviously, it's just it's an exhibition vehicle. But I think that thing just looks fantastic. I can't get over how well they created the look of a roller skate with an actual functioning frame with an engine that you can drive. I mean, it's like I said, it's probably the weirdest car I've ever written about. Mind you, I've written about cars that look like UFOs. I've written about cars that have the engines and the interior mounted backwards. I've written about cars that were once airplanes. I've written about...
Wait. I could not find your DC3 camper, which I know we wrote about, but I could not find it. But
holy
I did
crap,
find...
I totally forgot about the limo jet.
The limo jet, yeah, which is from 2020. And so, yeah,
it's older than that. We first came upon that car. I remember I actually talked to the builder over the telephone on that, like way back.
Oh, you're right.
Like 2017 or 2018, because they had just finished it up and they took it to a show somewhere.
Yeah, August of 2018. Here,
that's a Learjet. That's a Learjet fuselage. A legit Learjet fuselage. That they put an engine in and they put a working powertrain in, and they did the interior up. So it's just like a completely custom party machine. It has the engine nacelles still mounted on the side. It
totally does.
That they don't have engines, but they did put big speakers in them. So it's just it's a mobile party machine at this point. Those are, I think, 29 or 30 inch wheels on it. The wheels are incredibly large, but that gives you an idea of just how big this thing is, because the wheels don't look big.
No, they don't.
Sitting on it.
Because it's a Learjet and it, you know.
Yeah.
It should never look that. Yeah.
I mean, it's not entirely practical. Its turning radius is like theoretical. I think is the best way to describe it. It can probably turn. Do you want to try? Yeah. And when I say turn, I'm not talking about, hey, it can really go into corners at a racetrack. No, I mean, just like turning.
Yeah. Just a 90 degree intersection.
Yeah. No, you're going to back and forward that one, like at least 9 or 10 times to get through it. I totally forgot about that limo jet.
Yeah.
This roller skate is weirder. The roller skate is still weirder though.
Right. I was trying to look up the DC3 one, 'cause I remember that too. And I couldn't find it as I was searching, but I did find the limo jet and I figured that was close enough.
We'll have to bring it up for a future episode. And
folks, yeah, we'll have to find that one.
Send us your weird cars. I know they're out there. We love to write about them. We love to talk about them. Send us your weird cars. Maybe that you are building, that you own, maybe that you've seen. Email us podcast@motorone.com. You know what I'm going to say. Comment on our article that goes up every Friday at Motor One. Comment on our YouTube page, Motor One Podcasts. Listen to us on Spotify, Google, Apple, and a dozen other streaming platforms. You can watch us on Motor One Podcast. Wherever you get the podcast from, like us, follow us, subscribe us. It tells the algorithm, hey, these guys are doing stuff that people like, which means we get to do more of the stuff that hopefully you like. And this has been a pretty fun episode, Bruce. I've enjoyed this immensely. We're in the summertime where the regular news tends to slow down a little bit. We're not seeing quite as many debuts, although Hyundai is going to have some debuts coming up here maybe in the next week or so that hopefully we'll be talking about soon. But
And for anyone who's made it this far, we will have a guest next week. I'm not going to name that person just because it's always fun for, I think, for you guys to be surprised. But his specialty is 80s and 90s cars. And you know, Smith and I, we hate 80s and 90s cars.
We never talk about it.
We never refer to them. Like, I don't even know why I asked to be a guest. And then the following week we have, so this is one, as you know, last week I kind of teased this and I teased it in our post and things, timing things happened. Mm-hmm. So in 2 weeks we have a tentative guest and then we have another tentative guest on the books. So,
That other tentative guest.
And a super tentative guest, but for
have
sure
nothing, have nothing at all to do with like maybe iconic 80s stuff. So,
right. Of course,
there's a little teaser,
but yeah. So next week, expect 80s and 90s car talk. If you're not into that, I'm kind of not sure why you like Smith and I. being honest with you, like that's kind of our bag. But hey,
we'll have more to talk about though. Like I said, I'm pretty sure we're gonna have some stuff from Hyundai. So I mean, there'll be some good stuff to talk about.
Yep. But yeah, that's kind of the show. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate you. We love you. We thank you for all your comments. I'm sorry. I know on YouTube, I haven't responded to the comments from last week's show yet. Things just kind of got. I was traveling over the weekend because of 4th of July.
Holiday weekend, man.
Things, you know, happened, but I will be responding to all those. We got 3 or 4 comments. So I'll be taking care of those. But yeah, as always, thank you so much, folks. Look forward to the show next week. It'll be a fun one, especially if you like 80s and 90s cars. So thank you and bye-bye and have a good evening.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.